Welcome to the Just By My Vote podcast. I am Joseph Simmons, the host and also author of the new book, Just By My Vote, African-American Voting Rights in the Chicago Condition. It is my pleasure to have with me today, Professor Sandra Cosgrove. Dr. Sandra Cosgrove is a history professor at the College of Southern Nevada and also executive director and chair of the board for Vote Nevada. She participates and provides leadership on various boards and commissions involving voting and civil rights, including the League of Women Voters in Nevada and a board member of the ACLU Nevada. Sandra Cosgrove, welcome to the Just By My Vote podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
Very good. Well, thank you so much. There are several things we could talk about in the time we have. And normally, as I mentioned, I typically ask my guests to talk a little bit about their favorite sources of history. But given the fact that Nevada has ballot initiatives and a lot of, unfortunately, unclarity, if you will, on what they're about and how people should research them and view them, I wondered if you could give us a little bit of information. And I'll run something by you if I could. My understanding is that there are five measures which were certified for the November 5 ballot, and four of them are constitutional amendments. One of them that jumps out at me is the ranked choice voting, and then I'm a little bit unclear on the reproductive freedom amendment. Dr. Cosgrove, could you straighten us out?
Sure. So have you ever watched like a variety show and there's the person spinning all the plates and trying to keep them spinning at the same time?
Sure.
That's kind of what our election cycle feels like sometimes, because we have five ballot initiatives that we know will be on the ballot, because either with ballot question three, which is the ranked choice voting, open primaries with ranked choice voting, that actually qualified in 2022, but because it's a constitutional amendment, it has to pass twice. So we know it will be on for a second time. And then the other four actually went the alternative route in that it was a legislator that put it through our legislative session, and then from there it has to go to two sessions of the legislature and then out to the ballot. So those things we know for sure. The other thing is going on is that other ballot initiatives are trying to qualify right now. And so back September of 2023, September 1st, anybody that wanted to do a statutory ballot question, so that would either create a new law or an amended existing law, or a constitutional amendment ballot initiative, puts the language up on the Secretary of State's website. You do your submission, they put it up, and then anyone has 15 days where they can do a legal challenge, where they can say the description of effect is too vague, or it violates a single subject rule, or right now kind of there's this unfunded mandate requirement that's drifting around. If you make it through the court system through your legal challenge, then you have to get signatures. And so right now in this election cycle, the minimum number of signatures to qualify is about 103,000. It's okay. A percentage of the number of people who voted in the last election. So we're going off a midterm, which is usually lower turnout election. So it's about 103,000 signatures. If you get the correct or more number of signatures and they're verified by June 26th, then your ballot initiative will go on the ballot in November. So right now, the reproductive freedom ballot question is out getting signatures. And then I'm actually working on another ballot initiative to do an independent redistricting commission. That one is in the Nevada Supreme Court right now. We'll have oral arguments on Thursday. Hopefully, we'll get out of court jail, as we call it, and then we can start gathering signatures on that one as well.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, redistricting is a big deal.
Yes. And see, and it's weird living in Nevada. Are you in Chicago?
I am in Henderson, Nevada.
Okay, you're in Henderson. Okay.
Yes.
So Nevada is a very kind of strange place to try and do redistricting reform, because you would think with the Democrats being in control of the legislature and in so many of our lower government offices, that it would be no problem getting an independent redistricting commission here, because the Democrats support independent redistricting in red states. That is not the case. They sued to stop us. It was the Democrats who actually sued to stop our ballot initiative here, because the secret is that everybody knows is they actually like gerrymandering when it benefits them.
Right.
So it's one of those kind of politics is see me type of things.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I understand that the parties are also pushing back on the ranked choice voting.
Yeah, because we're going to take power away from them and give it back to the people. So they're mad about that, which makes me very happy.
Explain that process a little bit, please.
Sure. So ballot question three reflects or it replicates what Alaska already adopted in 2020. So I'm not sure if you've heard of like Mary Peltola and Lisa Murkowski, the two women that came out of the 2022 elections in Alaska, very independent minded women doing whatever they want, because both of them are very aware that now they can run under an open primary. So that's what we would like to have here in Nevada. And actually, it's just the top of the ticket that we're looking to do open primary, because in Nevada, the mayor's race, the judges' races, the city council, the school board, the board of regents, those are already open primary top two. So when the two parties are like, oh my gosh, no, we have to pick our nominees in a closed primary, I'm like, you don't in the city council race, you don't in the mayor's race. So I'm not sure why one, you know, what makes one magic and the other not. So they have a hard time arguing about that. But I know in those races, it is a lot harder for the parties to say, you as a candidate can't run, Joseph. We don't want you. It's only this one person, which I'm sure you've noticed on the upcoming primary. There's a lot of races in the primary with one person on the Democratic side.
Right.
Which means technically we don't have a primary in that race. We get no choice. In an open primary, anybody can put their name on the ballot. They'll be able to identify with any political party. They can't say they're the endorsed candidate or the nominee unless the party endorses them. But anybody would be able to put their name on the ballot. And that means in the primary, you can go after the nonpartisans or the independent voters. And that's the key. Because in a closed primary, you're just talking to the small base of people who show up in a primary, which we rarely get over 22% turnout. And if the party says, don't vote for Joseph, then it's going to be really hard for Joseph to get out of that closed primary. And that's what was happening to Mary Peltola in Alaska, is she kept asking, and she's the first Indigenous woman to represent Alaska in the House of Representatives. She had served in their legislature for over 10 years. She kept asking the Democratic Party, I'd like to run for Congress. Would you support me? And they kept telling her, no, there's no way you can win. We're not going to support you. You can't run. As soon as they went to open primary, she said, well, let's see if I can prove them wrong. Put her own name on the ballot and ran her own campaign. And now she's Congresswoman Mary Peltola. Because guess what? She could win.
Right. Yeah, it definitely opens up access. I guess the other side would be it's a little bit more complicated with the weighting and that kind of thing. Wait. You tell me.
Well, okay.
In terms of the ranking.
Okay. So if you're going to do open primary, and then they did top four, but we want to do top five. So that's the other thing we want to change. We don't want it to be just top two. Because as we just saw in California with the Senate race there, Adam Schiff was able to win by being mean and nasty to Katie Porter and Barbara Lee, who were the other two Democrats in that race. Because it was top two. He just wanted to be able to move forward. What we want is we want to make sure at least five candidates move forward. So that maybe you get a couple of people who don't have $1 million or deep pockets, maybe they can also get through, which is why Mary Peltola was able to get through, because she was able to get enough money to run her primary. And then once she came through, then, you know, when she got moved forward, the money started coming in and she was able to run, you know, a more kind of beefed up election cycle. But we want to do top five and say we want more choice. Nevada is very diverse, so we need to have more choice on the ballot. So that it's just not the two white dudes again running for president. Our ballot question wouldn't change how we do the presidential election, but Senate, right. Congress, legislature, we don't just want to see one person on the ballot. We want to see more diversity. We want to see more diverse faces and voices and ideas. But if we do that, if we open up the primary, let more people get on the ballot, and then move more people and their ideas forward, if you don't use ranked choice voting, you end up with the problem we're having now where everybody's afraid of no labels and Robert Kennedy Jr. Vote splitting.
Okay.
So like the mayor's race in Las Vegas right now has 13 people, but there's at least three prominent Democrats. So there's Shelley Berkeley, there's Cedric Creer, and there's Kara Jenkins. And there's one prominent Republican, Victoria Seaman. The Democrats are now worried that they're going to split the Democratic vote. And when they split it, it's going to allow Victoria to win. At least we know she's going to move forward. But if you use ranked choice voting, then you avoid that vote splitting problem that everybody is so worried about. Because when you get to the general election, people go in and you can rank up to five. So if you and I get our ballot, whether it's either the mail-in, we have the piece of paper, or we're using the voting machine, you can pick one person or you can rank all five. And it's up to you to decide what you want to do. If you just decide to pick one, then the others will be counted as none of these candidates, which is something that we're allowed to do in Nevada. When they do the first tabulation, if someone in that race gets 50% plus one, so we want to make sure they have a majority, not somebody winning with 25% of the vote, then the election is over and that person wins. But if no one gets the 50% plus one, then the candidate with the least number of votes drops off, and then we'll be able to see of their voters, who did you pick as your second choice? And then their second choice votes goes into an instant runoff. And so it goes over to their second choice candidate. And then you run the tabulation again. And you just keep using that process until you get somebody with 50% plus one. It's rarely more than three rounds. And so it's just an instant runoff, as opposed to as saying we want a majority, but maybe we'll do like Georgia and have to wait 6 weeks and it costs more money and everybody's tired and no one shows up. This way you get the larger number of people and you do an instant runoff so that you can get to that 50% plus one to find out who was the consensus candidate. So that way, if you and I were voting in the mayor's election, I might say, oh, I really want to vote for Kara because she's the Black woman and I want more Black women in office. But I'm kind of thinking that Shelley probably has a lot of support too. So I'll give Kara first and then I'll give Shelley my second choice. And then I'm a Democrat, so I want Cedric. So I'll go with Cedric third and then maybe Victoria Seaman fourth. Okay. But then that way, if Kara is not the top one, she drops off and then my vote goes to Shelley. So now Shelley has more votes and that's going to make her more competitive against Victoria. And gotcha. So now we don't have to worry about having a diverse group, you know, field of candidates and then having vote splitting and somebody winning with like 25% of the vote. This is done instantaneously with computers. So when Alaska in their general election, went on YouTube and we all sat and watched them do this. And we watched on YouTube and we could see the big screen where they did the calculations. Mm-hmm. And so in the races where they did ranked choice voting, we could see how the one person dropped off. We could see where the next votes went. They ran all of their elections in 30 minutes. It didn't take more time.
Right. Yeah, because, I mean, just looking at things, following the explanation, it sounds like that should be something that takes a little bit longer to determine.
If you did it by hand count, it probably would.
Right.
But with a computer, and our voting machines that we have right now, they already have the software in them to do ranked choice voting. It's just a matter of flipping a switch and turning it on.
Interesting. Talk a little bit about the Reproductive Freedom Amendment, please.
Sure. And you're okay with everything about ballot question three?
I think I'm pretty good. I mean, do you have anything you want to add in terms of, you know, the reasons why we should be voting? What you're suggesting is a yes on three, correct?
Yes on three, because we need to have more power to the voters. The parties have taken too much power away from us. And so I don't want them picking the one person who's going to be on my ballot. You know, we just saw in the presidential preference primary, basically we had one choice because the party decided we were going to have one choice. There's a lot of people that could have been on that ballot that were equally as good, but the party decided that you and I didn't even have a chance to pick someone else. That is not the way our democracy was set up to run. You and I should be able to have more of a say on who stays in the election and who gets elected. And when they say, oh, it's so complicated, and then I explain it in 2 minutes and people go, okay, yeah, I get that.
It's not that complicated.
It's not that complicated. So I have to say to the parties, you're just BSing people and we're trying to make it think it's complicated.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously then they have a vested interest in trying to preserve their power.
Yes, they do. And I can respect that and understand
that. Right.
But I'm telling them, you know, I'm an older white woman and I plan to have on my tombstone, Sandra Cosgrove died with no privilege left.
That's funny.
So I can get this one over. I can get this one over the line and maybe the redistricting one.
Well, now, while we're talking about this, I mean, the whole fact that I think the latest statistics are somewhere around Nevada is about a third nonpartisan.
Yes. And that's the other thing about ballot question three is if you're an independent, we call them nonpartisans. That's 37% That is more voters than a registered Democrat or registered Republican. If you add in the third parties, that's 40% of the vote. And because we have closed primaries on the top of our ticket, we tell them you can't vote. And so I find it very troubling to hear a Democrat say you can't vote.
Understood. Agreed.
People should be able to vote.
Do you have any sense of how the polling is coming on that?
Yes, actually, I do. So the Gwynn Center, which is a kind of a bipartisan think tank, just did some polling on it. And there's huge support for open primaries. And then people are not quite sure about ranked choice voting. They would like to know more. And then there's, because we have so many new people that move in all the time, we always have a group of people that says, I don't know what you're talking about. So right. It's voter education that we're going to have to just really ramp up this summer.
Now, who, when you say we, obviously you're probably talking about everybody, but in terms of your representation, who do you see moving that forward?
It's a small state. I can get in front of a lot of people, especially when I get on people's podcasts.
Well, we appreciate it.
Right. And, you know, I know a lot of reporters, and I interact with a lot of reporters around the state because our reporters are usually in flux, too. And so every time we have a legislative session, because we only have it every other year for 120 days, I can always tell when session starts because the reporters start texting me and calling me going, I don't understand what they're doing and why is this crazy? And so I spend all session kind of hand-holding them through the civics processes. But then that means they always say, hey, if you need a favor, just call me or text me. And so all the reporters that I work with, whether it's TV or news, they're like, you know, when you guys are ready to start rolling out voter education on ranked choice voting, just let us know and we'll start helping you get the word out.
Nice. Now, let me ask you, what does Vote Nevada do?
So Vote Nevada is just a very small 501c3 nonprofit for civics education.
Great.
Because I just found that everything I was teaching in the classroom, people had the exact same questions kind of in the public. And so I said, as a community college professor, it's my job to also do public service. So that's what I do for public service.
Nice. Okay. Very good. How about the Reproductive Freedom Amendment?
So that one's interesting because of some things that are kind of unique to Nevada. In 1990, there was some women and some male allies decided that they wanted to take our abortion law, which was, you know, women have a right to do what they need to do with their bodies up to 24 weeks. And they said, we really like our abortion law, but we know as a law, it could easily be changed. That if we had new legislators come in, they could change it. So in Nevada, not only do we have the initiative process, but we also have what's called the referenda. And so if you put an existing law out, you refer it, that's where the word referendum comes from. If you refer it out to a vote for the people and the people vote and say, we like this law and we don't want this law changed, that law gets locked down so that legislators cannot change it. The only way you could change our abortion law is with another referendum. And then you would have to get two-thirds of the vote of the people to actually change it. So it's a very high bar to change our existing law. So we have our level of protection for abortion rights in this state is stronger than even most states who have constitutional amendments in their constitution that protect abortion rights. So then you would ask, why are we doing an amendment to our constitution to protect abortion rights? Some of it's political. I mean, obviously, if you look at ballot questions on abortion rights in other states, it drives out a lot of people to vote because there is a lot of support for that type of a ballot initiative. So the Democrats obviously want to drive turnout up. And they feel that having abortion rights protected in our constitution would give us greater protection. But I have to say there's a caveat that goes with that. Because if you understand how our system of laws works in the United States, the Constitution's at the top. That's the supreme law of the land. Then you've got the federal government, which is our three branches underneath that. And then you have your state constitutions and state governments, and then power flows down. Even if we amend the state constitution to say that abortion rights are protected in Nevada, if Congress passes a federal abortion ban, that actually nullifies the part of our state constitution. And so you still have to worry about who are you electing to Congress, who are you electing to the presidency when it comes to those types of rights, because just having it in your state constitution doesn't put it above a federal law.
Interesting. I understand that. Are there other initiatives that you think we should be aware of?
Sure. So there are going to be other initiatives. The first ballot question that you will see, and this is a ballot question that legislators put out for us to vote on. And this is kind of a weird thing because the initiative, the referendum, and the recall, we're supposed to all be to empower the voters to engage in direct democracy so that we could run a law or a constitutional amendment and pass it on our own, that we could refer laws out to lock them down, and that we could recall people if they got into office and they were doing bad things and we wanted to recall them. But in Nevada, the political party said, well, we're going to have a second route for doing ballot initiatives, and that's going to be legislators proposing ballot initiatives, which technically goes against the idea of the ballot initiative process, because it's supposed to be just a power that we, the people, have. But in our state, legislators can do it too. So ballot question one is an amendment to the Nevada Constitution that will take the Nevada system of higher education regents out of our Constitution. And the reason legislators want to do this is because they want to have more power to control what happens in higher education in the state of Nevada.
Okay.
That's going to be a controversial thing because I think most of us are aware of what's going on in Texas and Florida.
Right.
With the legislatures there and the governors there, like getting rid of diversity, equity, inclusion laws and programs, getting rid of the teaching of African-American history. There's just a lot of nefarious things going on in those states because of how much power the legislature has over higher ed. So I don't actually think that one has a shot of passing because our regents have actually been pretty good about trusting faculty and students to know what's best for us and to allow us, if we think that diversity, equity, inclusion offices and programs are a good thing, then they say, okay, we trust you. You guys go ahead and do that. And so I don't see that one passing. And I think that there's going to be a lot of discussion about that one. There's going to be ballot question two will actually take the word retarded out of our laws and out of the state constitution. That is a word that maybe we used 50 years ago and thought it was appropriate. We no longer think that that's an appropriate word. And so it needs to be removed and replaced with persons with disabilities.
Gotcha.
And we have to do that every so often. Language changes and we start to realize the history associated with language. And so that's just not, that's something that's derogatory for people with disabilities. So that one's going to come out. Ballot question three, we just talked about. So that's open primaries with ranked choice voting. And ballot question four is an amendment to the Constitution. Because if you look at the 13th Amendment and it talks about slavery being removed, there's an exception. It's if you have been convicted of a felony, then the state actually has the right to enslave you. And that's, you know, the incarceration. We incarcerate you. And the slavery and incarceration has that connection because of the 13th Amendment. That's actually also written into the Nevada Constitution. And at least at the state level, we have the power to remove that.
Speaking of outdated language, that indentured servitude.
Yeah, right? That, you know, if you're duly convicted and indentured servitude, that stuff needs to come out.
Gotcha.
And it's appropriate and it should probably come out of the federal constitution as well, because it was actually added to the 13th Amendment in order to get more of the buffer southern states that did not secede from the Union, like West Virginia, Missouri, Tennessee, to vote yes on the 13th Amendment. So it was, again, another one of those compromises that laid Black lives on the line in order to get something passed, and it should come out. It should come out. And then then the ballot question five, and I'm looking at it right now, there is a sales tax in the state of Nevada that has to be renewed every so often. And so it will be on the ballot again in order for us to examine whether we want to renew it. And it's been in there since 1955. And so I'm assuming that people will go ahead and renew it because a lot of our revenue comes from sales tax.
Yeah. I mean, you make a good case for all of these. I just wonder who's doing the education to the public on these issues.
It'll be me this summer.
Okay.
It should be more of my colleagues at the community college level. But there's a lot of worry that doing civics education is somehow political.
Wow, yeah.
And so I'm like, yeah, but you're hurting the public if you don't help them understand ballot initiatives and help them do research and those types of things.
Understood. Is there a website or something that people can go to get more information?
If you just Google Vote Nevada blog, my blog pops up, and that's where I'll be posting information about meetings that we'll be doing to talk about ballot initiatives. I'll do an analysis, you know, walk everybody through the language of each ballot question, show you where you can do the pro and the con side, just so people have a reference that they can go to that's not biased.
Interesting. And then I thought I noticed you also coordinate some events for candidates and what have you. Is that?
Yeah, we just did on March 31st or March 30th, we did a candidate forum for the down ballot races. So judicial candidates below, those are all our open primary nonpartisan races, because those are the races where, I mean, we've got many people running for school board. We have many people running for judge, many people, you know, running for mayor and city council. Those are the races where you have a lot of diversity. But if you're registered as a nonpartisan, you may have heard, oh, it's a closed primary state, so you can't vote in the primary. I wanted to make sure that nonpartisans knew that half of our races are actually open primary and you will be able to vote in those races. So come on over, talk to the candidates. And then the end of this month, April 27th, we'll do top of the ticket. So those are going to be our closed primary races. So that's everything from U.S. Senate down to our county commission races.
Understood. Well, Professor Cosgrove, this has been very informative. I think I'll have to probably try to get you back sometime a little bit later on, because there's only so much we can cover. But thank you so much. And thank you for sharing with our listeners today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, well, we hope you enjoyed that episode of the Just Buy My Vote podcast. We're looking forward to the next episodes. You can find the book at justbuymyvote.com and feel free to follow us at justbuymyvotepodcast.com for notification on upcoming podcasts and events. We thank you for the privilege of your time. And until next time, just buy my vote.